Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hi, folks. It's me, Justin Robert Young.
Brian Rushwood.
Yeah, that's who I am. The B-man. Right.
Brian, I just asked Justin this, asked him if he'd seen Jurassic World. He hadn't. Mm. I actually bought tickets for me and my friends. I sat down in the theater and it was too warm, so I left.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
If I hadn't been in a theater after tickets were paid for and seen you bolt from it, I would say that's a crazy thing. I wouldn't believe you would do that. But I've seen it firsthand. So yes, I understand.
Yeah, I'm a fussy man. We'll call
it that. Fine. Look, ain't nothing wrong with that.
And I'm also one of these people. I'm like, hey, listen, like my friends. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna see if I can find a colder theater, and everything else had already started. And so I went home. I wrote a chapter in my book, and I drove. So I finished. I wrote a chapter. I'm like, this is great. Looked at my watch. Perfect. Drove back, picked them up. They're like, what happened? I'm like, I went home like that. But you came back. I'm like, well, yeah, of course I came back. I'm like, I don't want to ruin it for everybody else. You know, like I just texted a friend like, oh, find it. Because the last thing I want is everybody else to be like, you know, I did not want to make it about me or my fussiness. That would have drove me nuts because I'm just
super uncomfortable. Right. Right.
Yeah. I just much like, we had that where I sit down. I'm like, listen, I'm going to go. Please stay, you know.
Right.
We haven't seen it. So this isn't going to be an hour-long conversation about Jurassic World.
No, although I am wearing my fantastic Jurassic Park T-shirt that was hand-drawn for me by one Brant Hughes for the film riot sketch that we did.
That is awesome. Does that T-Rex have an afro?
Maybe. I think he's got Brian Brushwood spikes on there is what it was.
Ah,
like,
cool.
What was funny is as Brant drew this, like the skit was, you know, Ryan Connolly always wears a Jurassic Park T-shirt, but I was like, you know, we wanted to make me look like a shabby impression of him. So as he's making it and he's drawing these precise lines, I'm like, hey, Brant, just so we're on the same page, you need to make it crappy. Like, I know that's not what you do, but I need you to intentionally make it bad, like I drew it. And he's like, okay. Nailed it, as always.
So, I don't want to spoil anything. I don't know a lot about the movie, but apparently some wild creatures run amok.
What? That's nutty talk.
Yeah, that's the thing about those Jurassic Parks. Not exactly safe. Not exactly a sterling safety record.
I'm wondering how they keep getting funding and why haven't, I guess being not technically in the United States gets you out of a lot of oversight issues.
Yeah, you just grease a few palms down there.
So, I mean, could you imagine what it would be like all of a sudden a bunch of ferocious animals got loose around you? You know, herbivores that could stomp you, carnivores that could devour you. You know, you think everything's fine, you think it's safe. The next thing you know, in the middle of, you know, a suburb or whatever, and then all of a sudden that happens, or just in your safe place.
You know what? If it were any other program we were on, I would say, man, that's crazy talk. You're telling me stuff like Jurassic Park actually happens, but knowing this is Weird Things, I'm really curious to hear what comes next.
All right, Brian, Justin.
Bring, 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 bring.
Brian and Justin, situation evaluators.
No, your homes, your respective home.
Hey, what's up? It's Brian.
Don't go outside.
Who is this?
Hi. Oh, this is Justin. Brian, why'd you just call me to patch in this call?
Well, you and I were on the phone, and then the phone rang, and then I just three-wayed us because I'd like to do that with random strangers. Somebody called to tell me not to leave the house. What's going on? Who is this?
What's up?
Well, you know, the rainfall, the flooding, we've had a little bit of a problem with our enclosure.
Your house? Are you flooded? Look, we're already, Brant's already living in our spare bedroom.
We've had I'm calling from the zoo.
Oh my God, the Austin Zoo is literally right up the road from us.
Yeah.
That's like 10 miles away.
Yeah, we've had flooding, so this could happen there. So yeah, we've had a bit of an escape.
It's only 5 miles away as I think about it. Even less as the crow flies. Well, I'm sorry. Some birds got out, I guess?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, birds got out. You know, the ones that just were too lazy to leave whenever they wanted to leave. We lost some birds.
You guys probably had a lot of those like lizards and like maybe a few reptiles. They love that watery marsh, right? They probably just took to it like a reptile to marsh.
Yeah, we may have lost some reptiles, and then some of the enclosures sort of collapsed or fell down and stuff.
Let me get in the car and I'll come over. I'll give you a hand. We can round them up.
Don't get in your car. Stay lock your doors.
Oh, they probably meant one of those. They have the bug huts at the zoos. You know, you got a bunch of bugs. Like, just crumbled it in. Next thing you know, you got bugs everywhere, right?
Well, I mean, but that doesn't make sense, Justin. Why would I not want to leave my house?
I mean, you want to definitely not leave without some mosquito spray.
Oh, you know what? I see. Caller makes perfect sense. We've got some DEET. I'll spray it on. I'll be right over there. Let me get in the minivan.
It's a mammal situation, guys. It's a mammal situation.
Well, sure. Everything's a mammal situation. I'm here. You're here. Brian's here. We're all mammals.
We all have breasts. We lactate for our young. I mean, not you and me personally, but yeah, sure. Mammals abound.
Name everything. You know, the Declaration of Independence, the spruce moose, you know.
Well, okay. So, well, hold on. I guess what? We got the... I mean, how big a mammal can it be? They got some hyenas over there, maybe. It's not hyenas, is it?
Let me check.
Justin, this is not a good sign. He appears to be checking a manifest of creatures.
I don't see hyenas here, guys. I don't see hyenas. So there's a ray of sunshine.
But apparently, well, dude, dodge that bullet. No hyenas, right?
Yeah.
High five.
I'm a little bit worried at this point. So, I mean, you guys have to, I'm sure you got security cameras. You guys know, like, how contained this escape is. I mean...
Oh, we know. Yeah, we got covered. We know what's not in the zoo. We know what's not in the zoo.
All right, so just go ahead and give us... We'll just nibble around the edges before we get to whatever's got everybody all up in a panic.
Let's play a little game called How
Anything
Many
to
Legs?
Keep you indoors.
How many legs? In George Orwell's Animal Farm, would they be two leg or four legs good or two legs better?
Define better.
Well, I'm saying like these mammals that have escaped. Are they a four-legged variety or are they a two-legged variety?
Well, most are four-legged. Most are four.
So, I mean, like... let's say I were to leave the house, which, to be honest, I'm getting a little parched and I think we're out of Bud Lights. So if I were just to leave, where would it stack up to, let's say, my 2007 Toyota Matrix?
I mean, you'd be safe in a Matrix, right?
Right. I could just run them right over.
You would be totally safe in your Toyota Matrix if you did not leave your garage and you had a reinforced garage door. You didn't turn it on and die of carbon monoxide poisoning.
All right. Hey, you know what? I made some prison hooch. It's been fermenting under your sink, Justin. Just grab that instead.
So here's what we'll do. Just give me a letter of the alphabet.
Oh, geez.
How about C?
Like as in carnivores?
Oh, geez. Okay, what about D? We could do D, right?
D. I think we're okay on D.
What about L? Did I step in something there?
Listen, what L word are you worried about?
I mean, yeah, you know what? Let's go with T. Is there any T animals coming at us?
What T word are you worried about?
Oh, jeez. It's not good, Justin.
So obviously, I think... What about bees?
What B word are you worried about?
We might, LTB, oh my, like.
LTB, oh my. So should we be worried about LTBs coming at us?
Let me check. Maybe not the B now that I look here through my list.
It's good.
The L and the T, and then the H is Oh, no, we got B's. You're worried about the B's, too.
Damn it! Damn it! Yeah.
And the W's.
Wait, werewolves? What are the W's? Wolves?
Well, I mean, they have specific breeds, but they are in that category. Yes, wolves.
Oh,
yes.
God, dog. Oh, so you're telling
walruses.
Me a... Wait, say that again?
Walruses?
Walruses, yes.
I think you're fine. I think you're totally all right. Fine.
That's good, because they can move if it's a flooded area.
Holy cow. Look, if I'm not mistaken, Andrew, it sounds like you're calling us with a dire warning about lions, tigers, bears, and wolves loose in the area. How many are we looking at, if that's the case?
I'm going to send you a little bit of an article you can look at here. And you forgot the hippos.
Oh, are you kidding me? Hippos got loose?
No, yeah. Those are actually killing machines, especially if you're dealing in a flooded area, man. Like,
oh my God. The headline reads, "Chaos and panic, deadly floods bring fear over escaped zoo animals." Georgia, are you kidding me? Oh my God!
My God!
Oh my God!
It's following a deadly flooding and a freak storm after a storm. That hippo, the pig that you see there, the lion also found roaming the streets.
Oh
animals
my God!
Escape from a nearby
they
zoo.
Call it. This is the Republic of Georgia. They call it Jumanji in Georgia.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. I was actually in the city where they shot Jumanji this week.
Oh, that's amazing. Residents were warned to stay indoors as police conducted the hunt, but fear deepened as night fell on the city of 1.1 million, with some of the animals still on the loose. Holy cow. How did I not hear about this? How did the whole world?
What the hell has happened on that?
There's a if you want the rational scientific explanation for this, just go to the second paragraph towards the bottom.
Here we go. Of course, Fox News, our place for rational scientific interpretation, says here.
As opposed to those other places you would go.
The head of the Georgian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Ilya II, was quoted by the Interfax news agency as telling a Sunday mass that Georgia's former communist rulers bear responsibility for the disaster.
Here we go, Brian. I'll read the quote. "When communists came to us in this country, they ordered all the crosses and bells of the churches be melted down and the money used to build the zoo."
All right, I
have a question that doesn't sound to me like a Tbilisi Russian Georgian accent.
Yeah, I think
accident.
You got the wrong Georgia.
Oh, Georgian. Wait, no. Oh, this is Georgia the country, not Georgia the city?
Oh, no. Yes. No, well, the state.
The Republic of Georgia, yes.
The state, rather? Okay, here we go. "When communists come to us in this country, they order all crosses and bells of the church be melted down and money used to build the zoo,"
he said.
"This sin will not go without punishment. I am very sorry that Georgians fell so that a zoo was built at the expense of destroyed churches."
Man, never let a good disaster go to waste.
I mean, you know, the funny thing about it is that, like, I'm only kind of nascently familiar with some of the horrors of communism in Eastern Europe, but like at the same time, if I lived and I grew up in it, all of a sudden I might find biblical floods a thing to plug against it.
Yeah, man. So how many animals total do we know?
A lot.
It says here, oh my gosh, 12 people died during the flood. That's what it was. The carcasses of at least a lion, a boar, a tiger, and wolves, and authorities said 6 wolves were also dead. "I feel frenzied. The youngsters can't go out and walk around. I sat on the balcony with them and played games so they could breathe some fresh air," said 25-year-old, name I can't pronounce.
Wow. So wait, so you kind of...
Many monkeys escaped? 5 lions were unaccounted for? That's... So
you got this, you get the sense then that you need like X level. Like if you want a zoo, there should be some kind of chart that's like, you need this level of infrastructure before you're allowed to build a zoo, right? Like you need a base level of like, you know, because there's a lot of floods that happen in America. I mean, like you said, Texas just went through historic biblical flooding, yeah, right? Yeah. Haven't seen a whole lot about animals getting wild and roaming throughout Texas.
I mean, just because we were lucky enough that we, you know, that our zoo didn't happen to be built in a floodplain, you know, that don't mean it couldn't happen here.
Sure. But isn't that kind of the point?
And plus also, like, I'm in favor of reducing the barriers to having a zoo. I think we should be able to make our own weird things zoo. And ain't nobody's, never
this,
mind.
This is the final phase of your bizarre anarchic libertarian views. It's just like,
yeah.
Like, no, my 8-year-old daughter should buy a zoo. Well, I don't know why I can't order hyenas on Amazon Prime.
Heck yeah, man.
Thanks, Obama.
What would be the first thing we would put in the weird thing zoo?
I can move us to the next story, and I have a suggestion for that.
Oh, really? I see. Yeah, all right. Got... Right on.
All right. But first, gentlemen, if we wanted to make a weird thing zoo, we would need the support of the weird things listeners.
Yep. It's tough.
It's Pat. Patreon, that is.
Yeah, man. Get this. We are only, you know, if you're a sinister person who wants to bring on the apocalypse and you love numerology, you know, you're only $17 away from us being at $666, which would awaken the beast. The beast, of course, being Brian's desire to create his own zoo without government regulation.
Absolutely. Everybody head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings where you support the show. I think it's about time we also had a little, now that we have our producer here, we probably should give a little fresh coat of paint to some of our goals here.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
We need your support to make Weird Things even weirder. And if you're part of Weird Things, one of the things you can get is the Weird List, which is a sometimes multiple times a day, little bits of weirdness that we like to share with you. And, you know, other things that are in development. So if you go to support us at Patreon, patreon.com/weirdthings, you can find out more about it.
Heck yes. All right, so what's our first animal?
Well, I'm not saying it's an animal or something. I'm saying that it's weird.
Okay.
There have been stories in this neighborhood, around the golf course, around playgrounds and walking paths, people have seen something.
Okay. So this is, what kind of neighborhood are we looking at? This is a nice little suburban area. You said
suburban sort of neighborhood.
You said golf course.
Kind of a lot like where you live.
Right on. Okay. So normal folks like me, they're seeing something. I mean, are these adults or kids talking about it? They're not, you know, when some kids saw a raccoon in a sewer or something.
No, these, I mean, different people have been seeing this, and the entity in question has been described as about 6'5", very large looking, muscular looking.
And it's, it shows up like where are people saying they saw it?
Around the golf course. You know, intimidating them, scaring them. They say they've seen it. Playgrounds.
This isn't Chet.
OJ Simpson.
I mean, is this a person?
No, not a person. Nobody thinks that this is a person.
Huh. Is it? Can you describe the appearance or do we have any information on what they say it looks like? You said 6'5".
I have a lot of information on this, but I want to see where your minds go to this when I tell you that some 6'5" muscular beast is threatening people and intimidating them.
Wait, is this like an exotic pet? Does somebody walk around with like a beast that doesn't belong in a neighborhood? Like somebody has a, I don't know, we'll say a horse or whatever, like an unruly horse, and then they're all like, you're not supposed to keep livestock in this suburban neighborhood.
Not a horse, moves on two legs.
Moves on two legs? What is 6'5" and moves on two legs?
Be like a gorilla of some sort?
No way. A gorilla in a neighborhood? Like a silverback patriarch walking around on knuckle walking?
Not a gorilla.
Not a gorilla.
Huh.
Nope.
6'5". I'm like, oh. Wait a minute. Oh my God. I know what it is. I know what it is. This is a neighborhood in Australia and they're being harassed by a kangaroo.
You oh, are no, correct. Let me send you, let me just reload a Gmail. I'm going to send you the link to this, unless you guys find it before I send it to you. It is a 6'5" kangaroo, and they say the thing that makes it stand out the most is how muscular he is. The headline is, "Unusually buff kangaroo moves into Australian news neighborhood."
Oh, that's amazing. All right, so you're sending the link over here?
I'm sending you the link now.
I can't believe it.
With my... Oh, I just crashed everything. My headline for this was going to be Kangaroo Jacked.
Kangaroo Jacked.
This has been making the rounds. It is certainly something that people are...
Holy crap, that thing is ripped.
The shot of it is standing up. Standing up, it looks inappropriately jacked.
Oh my God. I want to play the Shia LaBeouf just do it video over this with the kangaroo screaming at you. Holy crow. This thing is terrifying. Do you even jump, bro? That's a person.
He's very intimidating. He's a big boy. He's got massive, massive muscles, big pecs and everything.
Pardon me. Girls with Australian accents.
Yeah. Yeah, pardon me. Girls who are conscious.
Oh, I'm sorry. Girls who are describing kangaroos.
We all have our fetishes.
So very, very big. And when you hear about a 6'5" mammal terrorizing a area, you're like, and not a horse?
Yeah, okay. So much kind of goes into this, right?
Yeah.
Kangaroos are known. I mean, you have the size, you have the musculature.
Right.
But kangaroos are in our popular culture vernacular, like, known to be boxers. Like, they train these things to box. Like, the idea of a kangaroo throwing hands on you is unlike almost every other animal socialized into our being. This is a real threat.
Yes. Well, and keep in mind, for the audio listeners, just to put it in perspective, it looks like if you've ever been at the gym and somebody just finished, like, a killer set, and he's, like, in this permanent, like, flexing, his chest and arm muscles there. I mean, that is what this massive, dude looks like. Hold on.
Massive
Sorry.
Muscles, big pecs.
Oh, no. Yep, there we go. Look at this. He has pecs. I've never seen a kangaroo with pecs.
I mean, this is basically Grumpy Cat for bros, right? Like, there's a certain personality type that really cottons to Grumpy Cat, and they're like, Grumpy Cat's my spirit animal. This is like a Nickelback listening Brosif. He looks at this, he's like, yeah, man. Like, he would buy t-shirts of this.
I mean, he doesn't look particularly threatening, although I certainly wouldn't let my kids get anywhere near him. It's like he would just...
He's got a six-pack.
He does. Look at him. He's got a six-pouch.
he has definition in a way that, like, it almost looks odd because it looks almost too human.
The quote that our producer Neshcom is giving says, Roger and visitors don't mix. Roger will attack any man he sees. Oh my God. This kangaroo though. God, if I could be one quarter the man this thing is.
So do we have video of him just destroying somebody?
God, look at
him. We're looking at this. These looks like shots from like Muscle Fitness magazine of the current Mr. Olympia. This kangaroo's musculature.
He's an Olympian god.
Oh my God.
Hercules
found a new cast for the Fast and the Furious. Vin Diesel, Rock, move over.
This is unbelievable. Okay, here we go.
Here we go. Here, don't mess with Roger.
There we go. Okay, so we're seeing... Oh, my God.
It's not the same
on?
Kangaroo.
Yeah, this is... I don't know what this is.
Roger and visitors don't mix. Roger will attack any man he sees. So, basically, I'm going to trap him in the enclosure.
Dude,
so crazy Australian guy running around. I may have repeated myself there, being chased by a kangaroo.
Well, and the kangaroo apparently is way more comfortable standing up. Like the kangaroo hops over.
Kangaroo.
Well, say that again, Justin.
This is Roger.
Yeah. All right. Well, then got wacky Benny Hill speed, and then
that's
I was,
the same one that was on the terrorizing the golf course.
I assume so. I mean, that's the. Maybe it's another.
And now there's a picture of it with just a crushed metal bucket.
Man, it says kangaroo sanctuary, so maybe this is a different muscular.
I mean, because the other one looked, that one that was chasing it didn't look 6'5".
Oh, good point.
Well, 6.5 feet tall. No, that was right there in the lead of the other one.
Yep, 6.5 feet tall, weighing in at 200 pounds.
Oh, wait. Oh, gosh. All right. I got to send you this link. All right. Your opinion about him is going to change radically, gentlemen.
Uh-oh. we're gonna find him sexting or something. We're going to decide.
No. You think you have heroes, and then all of a sudden it just comes crashing down around you.
No, opposite. Opposite. We create this monster. We build him up into something terrifying and something that we fear. And then you know... We get this. I just sent you a link, Brian.
Oh, this is the old one?
We're gonna get a little bit more side of Roger. We're going to get a little bit of his childhood. We're going to get a better understanding.
Oh, my God. This is amazing. Okay, here we go. Roger the kangaroo crushes steel in the viral photo that made him famous. Look at him.
Oh, no. He loves his stuffed bunny.
He's choking his stuffed bunny.
He's holding his stuff. He's got a stuffed bunny that he's holding on to. He's clinging to. And then let's see what Roger looked like as a little baby roo.
No.
Oh,
look at him. I could take
Joey.
Him in a fight. Come on. Easy.
And you know, this is, I'll tell you what, I don't want to say exactly what people are saying in the chat room, but this is what happens when the bros are out. You know, it's just, you see a picture of him as a baby and it's what a pussycat, you know, right there in the chat room. Just come on.
So there's the photo of him with the bunny and then the below it says, but Roger has a softer side. Here he is cuddling a stuffed bunny. But it said that after the photo was taken, he threw the bunny to the ground and tried to kickbox it too.
No way. Really?
Just because awesome. He doesn't take any mess, all right? Roger, I think this is...
I don't think this is the same one that was around the golf course.
Yeah, but it looks... look, man, apparently there's a...
There might be two. Might be two...
Kangaroos in all of Australia?
Dude,
I don't know the odds
on
that.
If there's two, then that means there's an army of these super juiced, steroid, methed out, insane combat kangaroos.
I think we have ourselves a UFC card headlining in Sydney, Australia, if there are two of them.
Town stalked by giant 2 meter tall, 95 kilo kangaroo with a torn ear who emerges from the bushes to terrorize dog walkers and golfers.
Yeah, this is a different.
This one is a different one?
Yeah.
Or then Roger?
No, Roger's a kept animal. Yeah.
Look, man, my money's on Roger. Roger's got the Roger knows why the caged bird
sings.
Oh,
sure. The one who has all the media attention. This is a kangaroo from the streets.
Oh, man. What? You saying you can't get your street kangaroo? Roger has been trained. He's been working in this facility. He was made from superior Russian stock. Injected with steroids.
Taking his supplements, you know, in a confined area. This other unnamed terrorist kangaroo is a true warrior.
Dude, look, I challenge
Witness!
You. Wait, what's that?
Witness!
Dude, all right, gentlemen, I'm going to change the topic here.
How much would you pay for a showdown between Roger?
I would not. That's actually intensely cruel between the two of them. However, if for whatever reason... they were being socialized together and there is just a natural form of them establishing dominance, $50.
And you wanted to contribute to the zoo so that you could help do your social part for.
I mean, listen, it's an animals fight. That's just a part of their lives. I would pay to watch them settle their score.
In the chat, Neshcom says that's dog fighting. You're describing dog fighting.
Yeah, no. You can't train them to fight.
No,
you can't force them to fight.
No.
You know, like if you move two animals together, this is just a part of animals living together.
So I'm going to change the topic now.
Yep.
My second attempt. Remember the old debate, you know, is Pluto a planet or not or whatever?
Yeah.
And it kind of said, well, it's a dwarf planet. It's still got planet in its description, but it's a dwarf planet.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the reasons it's not so well understood as to why that was decided was that as we started to look into our solar system, we started discovering other large bodies.
Some larger than Pluto, if I remember correctly.
What's that?
Some larger than Pluto, if I remember correctly.
Yes, and that's a thing that kind of gets lost. So Eris, E-R-I-S, is actually larger than Pluto. It's the solar system's largest dwarf planet. And to classify as a planet, you basically have to clear your orbit of all the little debris around there. Once you've done that, you're a big boy. You're in the big league. If we said, no, just Pluto-sized or bigger, we would have been left with, you know, 10 planets or... Right. You know, as far as we know. So there was a little article in IO9 about that. You know, it was called Meet Eris, the solar system's largest dwarf planet, which goes a little bit into that. So just a thought.
Well, there's things I want to say, but it goes into picks. So I'll save it okay. for picks. But I always found the weird response to Pluto not being a planet. It's like they didn't change the size of Pluto. You know, Pluto's still the same body that it was. It's like I don't know. It the whole thing struck me as highly unscientific and very emotional and irrational and just like, well, I learned this, so that's dumb.
That's probably because it wasn't scientific and it was emotional and irrational.
Well,
right?
Okay, all right, then good. So we're all on the same page here.
Well, and I would say that it wasn't as handled as well as perhaps it could have been on sort of the other sides. When you read Universe Today and they say why Pluto is no longer a planet, you know, and, you know, you get science journalists, you know, and National Geographic, other ones saying Pluto, not a planet. Pluto, that's not what was said. And so you can, on one hand, you could say the public had a misunderstanding, but the people who were writing science were going for these headlines, which were not accurate. You know, and for the sake of trying to create a story, get you read, like, well, guess what, folks? It's not a planet. No, it's what we call a rogue planet, a dwarf planet. It's a dwarf planet. So that was, I think, part of the problem.
Hey, real quick, this photo that we're seeing here, is this a photo or a rendering of Eris?
That would be a rendering of Eris. But yeah. We were starting to, you know, Eris was only, like, confirmed 10 years ago, you know. Right. So around the same time that we're debating, you know, was Pluto a planet or a dwarf planet, you know, we were making these observations of other objects were around that same size and come to realize that Eris is in fact likely to be larger. But, you know, I think one of the frustrating things, you know, is just that we can blame, people are ignorant, but I like, you know, bad science writing causes a lot of problems, you know, the brevity, the search for trying to create that great title and all that. And I've written sometimes to science writers and said, you know, this title is not accurate. And then you get this, Yeah, I'll correct it later on. And they don't care. They don't care. They just want to, you know, and it makes it hard to talk about these issues when the people who are supposed to be the communicators are presenting themselves as authorities in misconstruing things.
Well, and it's also the science stories that break orbit and kind of get out into mainstream media are very often even sharper tips of that same iceberg where you're only going to get X amount of words to say, Pluto declared not a planet. And you're going to get one quote, and it's going to be 400 words, and that's just going to be it. You know, and so you get the sharpened version of what is already kind of maybe a muddled or indelicately handled message.
I agree, but I guess that my when it comes to science journalism, is that you have to draw the line. You either have to say, I will report things that are accurate, or not report at all, or well, that, you know, or
I mean, that's also, though, I mean, I in the hypothetical case, as Justin just said, you would be doing that because it's factually accurate that somebody, declared Pluto not a planet or something like that, you know? And so...
But that's not, they declared it a dwarf planet, though. I mean, it's still a planet. It's a kind of planet, you know? There's full planets and dwarf planets and that, and I guess that's... It's this, you could technically parse and say, yes, no, it is. But that is, when you know how this will be construed and you write your headline because it sounds better to say that.
Yeah.
You're being dishonest.
Yeah, I agree. But here's the twist, right? Is you're 100% right in a case where you know and understand the scientific story and intentionally write it in a more headline grabby way. But I suspect that that's not the most common scenario. I suspect most of the time it's people genuinely don't grok the entire story and they're all like, oh, okay, so it's not a planet. And then they just write it down, not really knowing the difference.
Well, I think we're kind of taking, there's a couple different problems here. You know, A, there is sort of a larger sort of complaint or understanding about modern blogging culture wherein, you know, headline text, if it's wrong, we'll fix it later. Let's get it up, get it into social media as fast as possible so yours can be the one that is spread.
Right.
Is certainly an issue. And in science, it is exacerbated because we are not dealing with whether or not, you know, when the new Kardashian, season debuts, it is rather the understanding of our reality that we are kind of making pronouncements about. And then there is, and I think even what Andrew's getting to is you have respected science journals. You know, what should be not the flash understanding idea, but rather the kind of as definitive as word, you know, should get, based on the reputations of these periodicals.
Yeah. And I guess it's your... The news filter is always going to be problematic. And I think the frustrating thing for me is the people who often complain the most about science literacy are sometimes the ones doing the most damage to that.
Interesting.
It's a plot point of view.
The speaking of space news, did you see that the ESA, the Philae comet lander went to sleep? I guess it went to sleep 7 months ago with a dead battery. But after 7 months of slowly recharging its battery, suddenly booted up and chatted back to Earth. Did you see that?
Yeah. I don't know what it's had to report, but...
It's
been cold here. What's happening on a Game of Thrones?
He's like, no, seriously, I miss you guys. This rock is taking me really far away from Earth.
LOL, BRB.
That's very cool. That's, of course, anything that, squeezing a little more observations out of equipment, it has to be a good thing.
Yeah. So there you go. Gentlemen, do we have time for one more before we do picks?
Yeah. Heck yeah.
So you may recall in a previous Weird Things podcast, we were discussing the idea of sensing things in the brain and like, brain stuff and the idea of hooking up and all that and the far off weirdos idea that is that we all acknowledge will happen at some point, but how and when and whatever is, you know, room for debate. Like almost literally, no, seriously, not metaphorically, the 2 days later on The Verge, they had an article from mentioning Nature Nanotechnology about a new scientific procedure. And Bri, I want you to read this.
All right,
the way you read.
All right, so we had talked about like what kind of timeline we were looking at because I think it was Kurzweil had predicted like in 35 seconds we'll all be robots or something.
And again, this ain't like Brian. Read this is like
right. Well, I mean, just to jog everyone's memory to remember the conversation we were having.
Because, I mean, this could be like, oh, it's a horrible idea, and we're never going to do this. But
okay, here we go.
So Kurzweil and stuff that he has been saying forever and is now speaking about a larger journalistic, understanding and problem. Now everything he says is amplified because they can put Google in front of it, and that's a publicly traded company.
All right, Justin, tell me what you think of this headline. How do you feel?
It's steadfast that more of this will happen in our lifetime than we might want to consider. And so that's where we were talking yesterday. Brian, what is the news today?
The news today is injectable electronic brain nets could give us a window into the mind. And you see a super close-up photo of what looks to be some kind of a microfiber mesh coming
or
out
a fish
of a
net, you know, from an aquarium.
Oh, is that just what it is?
No, I don't know.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, that is kind of what it looks like. Yeah, I'll buy either one. It says here, from The Verge, shooting up with a syringe full of electronics is no longer an off-brand cyberpunk fantasy. In fact, it could be valuable scientific procedure. In this week's issue of Nature Nanotechnology, a Harvard research group is showing off a thin mesh that could track brain activity with less invasive implantation methods. It might not be a cranial surgical implant so much as a cranial injection. So, I'll keep going. Flexible tech can stick straight to human or animal organs, allowing for close-up monitoring. Stretchy electronic tattoos, for example, could keep tabs on heart or breathing rhythms. But once scientists move beyond skin, these devices will need to be surgically implanted, which can raise difficulties. The Harvard team addressed this problem in a novel way. The mesh they created, made of thin polymer and metal threads, does the job of traditional electrodes, but integrates it into the brain, acting like a scaffold that cells can bind to. This structure creates a solid connection for tracking or stimulating. Ooh, tracking or stimulating equals upload and download. Individual neurons, but that's not the only advantage. It can also roll up incredibly small widths, making it thin enough to be loaded into a 100 micrometer glass needle. And once it's injected into a region of the brain, it can relax and unfurl, blanketing the area around it. Holy cow. So it sounds like they tested it on synthetic gel, showing that it could unroll itself and settle into a brain-like structure. They say it's a smaller area than purely surgical implants would require. 5 weeks after injection, the mesh had spread out, and imaging showed healthy neurons around it. It also served its purpose. They were
in
able
mice.
To map brain activity.
In mice.
In mice. In mice. Yes, yes, yes. Wow. Wow. Yeah. They want to inject the mesh into newborn mice to see how it unwrapped as they grew. Wireless interface. Oh, my God. Can I say for the record? You sound conflicted, Andrew. I say 100% down for it. You drill,
oh,
drill a bunch
of holes? I mean, no, I'm, you know, whenever we discuss timelines of future events and stuff, often, you know, getting 90% of the way is the easy part. The other 10% is the really, really, really big challenge because it's all the things you didn't know. But yeah, we were talking about ways that we'd be doing brain interfaces in the future and stuff. And, you know, we mentioned, you know, pills or things like this. And here you have a thing that's it's still invasive. They still, for this version, it's not to drill a hole in your head, but they talk about 100 micrometer, which is, you know, if you went up to me with, you know, a syringe that thick, I'd still be like, no way, bro. But it's an amazing, the idea of this. We've talked about, like, you know, neural meshes, neural, you know, like the idea of actual physical sort of things that go into the brain and connect. And now we're doing this in mammals.
So think about this. What if it's a world where you have a newborn infant, and this becomes the new controversial thing that you do to infants, kind of like circumcision is right now, where it's like, these are the benefits, these are the detriments. It's weird, yes, but you know, blah, 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 for these reasons. You're going to circumcise or not. But what if it's like, hey, we don't know if you or your family is going to be opposed to being able to interface with computers directly from your brain or not, but wouldn't you like your child to be able to choose for himself and have the option, and therefore let's, you know, while he's a baby, we could put these in and everything will grow around them appropriately to have deep level access down the road.
Do you think that that's going to be something that they're going to recommend for children, or something they're going to say, just wait till you're 18 and your brain's developed before you do it?
Well, as I understood it, they in this test, they did it on baby mice and
No. That's their next trial.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. Well, I guess when I read the idea of cells binding to it eventually, I would imagine that inserting this kind of stuff for easy access to neurons earlier would work better than later, which is why I assume they're moving to baby mice.
No, they want to see how it fares as a brain grows. So, like, I guess there's probably a limit to injecting it into, you know, a mouse, and how much a mouse's brain you know, grows at the point that they would normally do it. So they want to, you know, see how it reacts to a growing brain.
Well, so let's say the standard is 18 and then you go once your brain's developed, which it really doesn't. Your brain keeps developing to like age 25, 26, right? Isn't that the...
Yeah, but I think that's why they want to figure it out, because I mean, people are going to want to get these at a point when their brain is still growing.
Yeah. I would imagine that even after a world in which adults are getting implants and rudimentarily, you know, interfacing with computers, man, you put a 14-year-old on that stuff, you put a 12-year-old on that stuff where they grow up doing it, that's some exponential next level, you know, learning to interface differently, I would assume.
I think, yeah, you know, it's, you know, we're looking at the telegraph, you know, in the 1800s, trying to figure out what Google's next step is.
Yeah.
But I, in my mind, as a writer, I'd go, well, what would be, if I was trying to create a universe with this kind of technology, what would be the most rational version that I would have? And I think that the big thing I have is that we would go for technologies that improve quality of life, but reserve the really altering, brain-changing sort of stuff until, and I'm talking 30 years out, 40 years out. We're talking 100 to 500 years out. Yeah, then it's a different thing. When your parents lived with these things for 300 years, you know, and we know so much more about it, it becomes a different sort of thing. They're like, oh yeah, no, we can put this in the infant when it's this. They'll have the regular sort of fetal development, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's the difference. Thanks, the future changes. You know, the future is going to be far more interesting and have far more changes than we've had so far. And so, you know, we tend to have this idea of the future as this static thing. Once we have these things, then the future is just one solid line when there's the future of the future. I think that, you know, I think that more and more I think about it is that I think that we'll get to, as we get more technology, there's going to be a push for people to be able to do balance, to be able to say, yeah, I might spend, you know, 8 months out of the year wired in and doing these things, but then I'm going to spend 4 months of the year in a, you know, cabin with my friends in Utah, whitewater rafting and unplugged and doing other stuff. So I have that appreciation and that back and forth. And we see that to a degree. You go to San Francisco high-tech areas, and then you look at the number of people who like to go kayaking and hiking and do these other things that are very distant from that experience. And I think that that's sort of a role, you know, a role of the future.
Well, and I think part of what I think will be the greatest benefit of stuff like this is just a further and deeper tracking of your brain and understanding, you know, what we might find to be imperceptible changes that could be affected by, you know, medicine or surgery and stuff like that. Like the idea that we could say, all right, well, what if, you know, at the moment that your brain began to show the beginnings of what could be dementia, there was some sort of treatment that could slow down that process, you know, and we knew that. So before the point where it's like we understand it to be like, oh, I'm forgetting stuff and I forgot my wife's name and what we think of as, okay, now, you know, it's on, or whatever, you know, levels in our blood, you know, that we can test for. If we can say, oh, no, wait, all right, it's starting here. Let's develop, A, you can get more insight into developing therapies for it, and B, you can have proof to say, yeah, no, start in on this. This goes now, because you can further delay, you know, what we right now have very little understanding of. You know, the brain's still tremendously complex for us.
I think we're going to see this, you know, applied to humans in our lifetimes. And I think the first cases are going to be those with spinal cord injuries, people who are disabled, who
stroke,
otherwise
things
wouldn't
like
be
that.
Yeah, to control, you know, walking robot legs or whatever, because that's a case where like the gap between their current quality of life and that which this affords are so great that they do it. And I think we'll live with that for 20 or 30 years before we enter the phase that Justin was talking about, where it's like now, hey, we can also slow down Alzheimer's dementia by stimulating things down the road. And then at some point, maybe 100 to 150 years out, it just becomes like, well, why don't we just make everything better for everyone with these?
I put it on a shorter time frame. I put it on a shorter time frame. I think that the way we do it is, I think that, you know, there's an expression human plus, and human plus is the idea of the humans plus all these technological innovations we can add to you, and you become sort of this next thing. I think that the popular thing is going to be human for a while, use technology to be a healthy human for a while, and then, you know, then ease your way into these things that will enhance and help you do that. And, you know, but there's going to be, if once we can do backups and things like that, you know, there's certainly going to be an argument for, if you told me right now, man, would I want to have a mesh? If it was a non-invasive mesh, would I want to have, well, minimally invasive mesh put in my head that could back up my head, so in case I had severe brain trauma and they had to regrow parts of my brain, but I would be able to recover most of my memories and my experiences, I would sign up for that in a heartbeat. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, like, dude, and this is all assuming a world where this is, you go into the doctor, you obviously pay probably an arm and a leg in the early going. You get a thing shot into your head, and it is at that point not something that you think
about.
Thanks,
Malia Obama. Yeah.
It's not something that hurts. It's not something that you think about. It is just there to track data. Let's say let's put the stimulus on the shelf for right now. Let's just say it tracks elements of your life. Like, we are buying hundreds of dollars worth of equipment every day to track our strides because we think it will give us an insight into living a healthy and longer life. If this could be $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 to just get brain data that was previously unavailable or extraordinarily hard to interpret, that to me seems like something that could happen in the next several decades, you know, and I think it would be very, very popular.
Have you guys seen this thing called Think, THYNC?
No.
Let me send you a link. We'll go to think.com, THYNC.
Okay. So this is a gizmo that does like an EEG thing on there?
It's a little brain stimulator.
Oh, yeah. No, there's that whole movement of people who are running currents through various parts of their brain and swearing that is changing their life.
There's a little video here.
Yeah, all right, let's take a look here.
The guy's on his airplane, puts his thing on his head, opens up his iPhone, and says, energy or calm? He presses energy. Woman's drinking coffee now. She puts this thing on her head. Guy's got his Heisman trophies there. So it's this thing that makes you look like you are a reject from Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, no, it's a triangle that you hook around your ear and sticks to your forehead or whatever.
And what it does is you hook it up to it connects to your iPhone, and you say either I want to be energized or I want to relax.
I mean, okay. These claims have not been evaluated by the FDA. I don't know. Like, how much
this
has to be?
This is a very well done video, by the way. I mean, this is
not a podunk.
Broadcast quality level, and well cast a video. Something that would not look out of place for a Samsung or HTC or something like that.
They have quotes from Business Insider, Daily Dot, and Bloomberg Business Week. Business Insider. The energy vibe made itself known right away. I certainly felt more peppy and awake than I did when I came in. Daily Dot. After 20 minutes of the think, I felt just better. Bloomberg. It all seemed crazy until halfway through the session when the familiar knot of stress in my stomach evaporated.
Okay. And I assume these are double-blind trials where they had somebody either
not.
Select...
Of course not. Of course not. These are business journalists, Brian.
I know. I mean, that's the thing, is that I would love to know, like... If, I mean,
all right, let me ask you a question. We could do our own double blind trial of this, because what it does is it can either, you know, tell you calm or it can make you energized.
Right, right.
Okay. And we could do a test where we have somebody wear one of these. We do a group of people wear one of these. And I'm sure there's a different pulsing, but if you don't know what it is, but I would imagine, you know, a faster beat would probably be energized, a slower beat would be calmer, but, we could.
Oh, so you actually feel something happening during it?
I believe so.
But look, this is $300.
Oh my God! Can we just buy one of these and do a test?
Do you want me to order one and do it?
Yeah.
or do you want to get it and test it on like Bryce?
No, I'll buy one.
Use the budget from the show for this.
Okay. Oh yeah. No. We'll double blind the hell out of this. And Neshcom screaming yes in the chat room.
So we need, all right. So we need, what is our test? Our test is that we don't tell him which we are plugging into his brain
or, I guess we got to goof around with it, but in the ideal circumstances, you would have three options. You would have like either you press energy, either you press calm, or you press nothing, and you have them report on the results. But I don't know, like, if it does pulse or vibrate or something, then that would obviously rule out the do nothing one.
Here's what I would suggest we do. One, it'd be nice to have a few more samples than Bryce. Here's the test that I would want to do. We'll assume for the moment that you can definitely tell something's happening and that so trying to do a baseline of nothing wouldn't be as effective.
Correct, correct.
Working with the existing hardware, we could do one where we get Bryce and a couple other people that we go do it and you say, can you tell Energize? Can you tell this?
By the way,
I'm
getting this right now. I assume that's okay.
What's that?
I'm just buying it right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Where they know what's
no risk. It's a 30-day money back guarantee. Yeah. We can knock this out in 4 episodes.
So we get a small sample group where we test and they know, did you feel energetic or did you feel this? And they don't know which one you pressed. Okay.
Right.
That would be my A group. For my B group, what it is we find people who say they do not know what this thing is. You show them this thing, they don't know it. We put it on them for half an hour to an hour, and then we say, how would you describe how you feel right now?
Great.
And we see if they independently offer that they feel one of those either extremes, relaxed or energetic or whatever. You know, the larger sample size, the better. But I think for the first just rough and ready sort of test is we do Bryce and we see if he can tell the difference between energetic or calm.
Yep. I'm in.
Let's also make it clear for everybody, including the Think company, that this is an unofficial for amusement only test.
Nope, this is official. This is, we are a government agency.
Could they get mad if we tried to do a test? I mean,
no, I want this to work. I was hovering to buy this because, like, I want this thing to work. So I am biased in that regard. And so we can absolutely do, we qualify everything that we're doing and saying, this is how we're going to try to test it, whatever. We're not scientists. You know, we're weird things. And I think, you know, we certainly, if we don't get the results that they say they have, we're not going to be like, you know, calling it all sorts of names or anything like that. And if it does, if we do get, you know, encouraging results, whatever, we're going to talk about that too.
It's a product that looks not as dumb as Google Glass. It's not far away, but it is less dumb looking. It has obviously lined up. It's got money behind it. In that ad for hip hop fans, you might know the name Dan the Automator. He is someone who is endorsing this. He was in the video.
Oh,
showing
I missed him. That's amazing.
How he gets energized and calms down based on the Think. It is a well designed website and a well designed app.
And their executive team is neuroscientists and neurobiologists. So it's not like the holistic people who are making dream catchers and stuff. These are people who have legitimate scientific credentials and come from an area of expertise which could lend support to this. Not to say that's a reason to say yes, it's true, but if you're looking for things that, you know, reek as suspicious or whatever like this, if you said, if this thing worked, what would that team look like? Right. Looks like, you know, I think the group of people here. So
it also, I will not say skeptical, I will say cynical. If you were to be a cynic about it, it has every hallmark of a placebo.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Well, especially because I'm looking at it now, and apparently it's not even, because there is transcranial electric stimulation, you know. This doesn't look like it's shooting electricity through your brain. It talks about neurosignaling.
No, but they're talking about, there's a reason for that. Okay. They talk about TDCS intense, which is actual electrical stimulation. The FDA is kind of particular about when you claim what you're doing and whatever. And so they're saying that the Think is sort of a surface thing, and they're not trying to claim that it goes deep into the brain or it's really high amounts of things. So,
but they're not.
They are trying to walk a very careful slope between, you know, something that they find to be effective and something where all of a sudden they have to do FDA trials and things like that, I think, is up to dollars.
Brian, go down to the testing portion.
All right. Yep.
So, culminating testing of thousands of subjects internally by science, externally by our university collaborators. So apparently there is some study.
Yeah, no, the group behind this, these guys are real researchers in this field. These are guys who've been new published researchers in the areas of this. So it's not.
Wait, go back up. We have developed the technology that can consistently and statistically reliable manner beat the placebo effect.
Yeah, right on. Our studies incorporate the use of placebo controls and blind tests under a variety of experimental conditions. Boy, I'll tell you what, this is the kind of language that you don't see in dream catcher, chi collector, you know, BS stuff. That's amazing. IRB approved protocols.
I want this to be a success.
Right on, man.
Strap in, kids, because y'all gave us money, and we're dumb, so we're buying stuff.
Yeah. Hey, man, so you guys want to do picks?
Yes.
I got a pick.
What you got?
You know, I go through, like, ups and downs on my Audible. Like, I just won't listen to Audible for, like, 6 months, and then I'll just start binging on Audible books over and over. So out on the road this week, I listened to Chuck Klosterman's I Wear the Black Hat, which is, I believe, his newest book of essays. If you are not familiar with Chuck Klosterman, he's probably best known for his rock and roll and music criticism. He's also a journalist for Spin and Vanity Fair and all sorts of magazines. This is his book of essays deconstructing what it means to be a villain and why we think of things to be villainous. I Wear the Black Hat, grappling with villains real and imagined. This, if you like Chuck Klosterman, you'll like this book. If you don't know him, then understand that, you know, this is every once in a while he kind of says things that might, like, you know, states things as fact that you just kind of have to keep rolling with and remember that, you know, this is just kind of think of him as just an erudite man at a bar that is having a very interesting monologue that you are enjoying listening to, and don't think too hard about it. But it is a book worth getting for one chapter, wherein, and I believe accurately, he states and details what is the only element of O.J. Simpson's life which is underreported in our memory.
Not his acting career. Oh, the fact that he won the Heisman? No, that's pretty well reported.
It was on the board of directors of Swiss Army Knife.
That is amazing.
That's a fact. That is a fact. He was.
That is a fact.
Was it philanthropy or something?
It is something that has fallen down the memory hole a little bit.
Oh, he was the spokesman for Hertz. He jumped over.
No. It is the book he wrote.
If I did it?
If I did it.
Wait, that's underreported?
That's
are you kidding
on my
me?
Conscience.
His point is not that nobody remembers it. His point is that when you break down exactly what If I Did It was, it should be almost the most, it should be the first thing that you think of when it comes to O.J. Simpson, considering that we spent as long as we did deliberating and arguing on whether or not he was guilty. Fact that he came out and wrote, and listen, I try not to, I may have set up this. I mean, that's like one line of the thing. You know, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, I brought it up to Brett, our friend Brett Rounseville, and he had no idea that this existed.
What?
The fact that there's anybody on the planet that has no idea that this existed is mind-blowing to me, as it is to the two of you, because I remember it. It's an amazing idea that, and if you don't know, O.J. Simpson wrote a book in which the first 80% is nonfiction about his troubled marriage to Nicole Brown, including arguments that they had and reasons for why they divorced, and he was very mad at her. It then segs into a hypothetical of him and an accomplice murdering Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman, where it is not just theory about, well, if I were this, I would do this. But if I were this, I would do this. It is just a straight ahead first person narrative, including direct quotes from everybody involved. And then ends with this hypothetical person getting on a plane to go to Chicago. It then picks up with O.J. Simpson in Chicago coming back to L.A. and including transcripts of his interview with the L.A. Police Department. So the idea is that it is 90% a nonfiction book and 10% a fiction book wherein somebody that is almost indistinguishable to him does it. I found the essay. I've always found that element of O.J.'s, the O.J. story, to be fascinating. This essay, I think, chronicled it in a very interesting and entertaining way. The book itself is good if you like Klosterman. I mean, like, if you find Klosterman to be annoying, for which I would understand, then it's not going to be anything different. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I remember that book is firmly in my mind because that was in his audio version of it. He used the word supposedly.
Oh, really?
And supposedly, supposedly, that is just an amazing word. I put that up there with, you know, George Bush's strategery. You know, these are words that are part of my vocabulary now.
Awesome. It also reminded me of an element of it, which I had forgotten, which is that it was initially going to be published by Judith Regan. Is that Random House? Or was it at the time? I can't remember. Whatever Judith Regan's publishing house was at the time. The outcry about it was so massive that he was cashing in almost nakedly on this. Also, by the way, ghostwritten by a screenwriter who lived on OJ's block when the murder happened and testified against him at the original criminal trial.
Whoa!
The outcry was so large that they destroyed all the books and also canceled what was going to be and this might have cemented it in people's memories, I think, more than how it wound up happening. Canceled a live television special. It was going to be a two-part television special during sweeps where OJ talked about from his own mouth on camera how he did it, if he did it. That was canceled, scrapped, right? And that would have been that, except for the fact that due to the lawsuit in Florida by the Goldmans, they wound up getting the rights to the book. So they wound up publishing the book as a way of financial restitution for the civil trial that they won against OJ, and changed the book cover to, Brian, you have to bring up the book cover for If I Did It.
Yeah, so this is all stuff now all of a sudden I'm believing that this is right, and this is all very underreported. That's amazing.
The book cover is in red, gigantic letters.
Oh, my God. Hold on. I have it here. Hey, real quick, just read to me what it says on this cover here, Andrew.
It says, I did it. Confessions of the Killer, in Goldman's, and If is in tiny, 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 tiny black font inside the red eye.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And they took OJ's name off it and put on the cover the Ron Goldman Foundation for Justice authorized version because it would turn readers off so much
to see OJ's
name on it.
Yeah. Wow. You're right. This is very underreported. I can't believe I never heard the rest of this story.
I found that chapter going into it. There was a lot of stuff that I had forgotten. That was really great. But yeah, check it out. Chuck Klosterman's I Wear the Black Hat, and hey, O.J. Simpson's If I Did It. Go ahead and pick them both up.
No, it's I Did It. Supposedly a bestseller.
I think I talked about it last week. I talked about how I was reading Seven Eves, and it was just really bumming me out because it's about the kind of destruction of the planet Earth. I finished the book, and I'm going to give it a wholehearted recommendation. I don't want to spoil any aspect of it whatsoever, but I was left really, really wanting more and wanting to explore more of the space where everything ended up. I feel like if you told me Seven Eves, Neal Stephenson's latest, was the first in a trilogy, I'd be super, super stoked because I think there's a lot of space to explore with what he set up. So yeah, my recommendation for a second time is Seven Eves, but this time I've actually finished it. It's S-E-V-E-N-E-V-E-S. And I don't want to give you any spoilers. I will say that it's a depressing topic and it gets super, super bleak. But I will say that I absolutely loved where it all ended up. And by the time it ended, I understood that there was reasons for everything I was seeing. And I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did. But having said that, it gets dark and it gets bleak, 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 bleak.
All right. My pick isn't so dark. It's delightful. It's fun. It's a movie that I think doesn't get enough attention. I think that it's it's an American classic immediately upon the time that it came out.
Jurassic
and,
World.
Culturally, I think it was significant. And when I talk to people, people go, oh, yeah, that was fun. And it's now, I believe, on Netflix streaming. Let me double check to make sure that I'm not a liar. I don't want to lie to you people, because lying to you would be not something I'd want to do. My pick, the one that I'm about to tell you, the one that I am going to suggest.
You can check it out on Netflix. The chat room will tell you immediately if it's on Netflix.
I know. Is...
Welcome to Treading Water, the podcast.
I was speaking. I was trying to tell them. And maybe it's not. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a great one.
I just watched that movie again, and oh, my goodness. You know, what a fun movie, just a very well-done, well-told story. Coen Brothers, it's you know, in the – I don't think it's actually in Netflix streaming right now. It's just a fun, you know, movie. It's, you know, the three convicts, you know, in the Depression era South on the run, and just the music, the story, everything. It's just such a well done movie. I look forward to everything the Coen brothers do, even the movies they do that I don't like. And that would be my pick that you check out again.
Yeah. And by the way, exciting also because I guess the newest movie that they're shooting is kind of back to their comedy roots, Hail Caesar, starring George Clooney. So, you know, hopefully we will be getting more of this flavor. But this was actually, I think, the first Coen Brothers movie that I really fell in love with, you know, just in the time that it was being released and the age that I was. I remember seeing this in theaters and just... being so charmed by it. It's so good. And the performances, as we've kind of seen both before and after of the three leads, are just out of this world. It has pretty much every Coen Brothers cameo you could possibly want of people that have worked with them in other movies. And really a kind of a game changing soundtrack, you know.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, I guarantee you my in-laws had never heard of the Coen brothers, would not be able to quote a single line from The Big Lebowski, but they all bought the soundtrack and loved it.
T-Bone Burning.
Yeah. Did I tell you my Hail Caesar story?
No.
So I was with a friend. She and I were hiking around Vasquez Rocks. Remember, that's the Star Trek rocks, Justin. You know, that's the big rock formation. It's about 45 minutes north of where I live. You feel like all of a sudden in the middle of the West. And we're walking around, and it's kind of quiet there during a weekday. And we're walking around this big rock formation. And I look on the ground, and I see an electrical cable, right, running between brush. I'm like, well, this seems rather artificial for the middle of nature. You know, and I see this cable and I'm thinking like, you know, the only people I know would use a cable like this would be a movie production. We keep walking along the trail. We walk around and then we see a guy standing there with a walking headset in front of sort of some brush. And he says something as walkie-talkie, and then we walk over, and he says, hey, can you guys hold on for a few minutes while we get the shot? I'm like, yeah, sure. And we look beyond them, and we see there's a field way beyond, and there's a whole production camp there. There's guys on horses. There's somebody going, yeah, yeah, as they're shooting an entire, like, horse chase scene out there. And I'm like, well, what is this? He goes, oh, it's Hail Caesar. I'm like, oh, cool. So they were shooting Hail Caesar out there.
That's
so,
awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. So we waited. I don't know what, you know, when I see the scene in the movie, I'll be able to tell you that was it. So it was just a fun, weird, you know, that's L.A. all the time kind of thing where you just walk right into a set in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, sure. So, that's awesome.
Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.